Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Nasiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn about what they do in their civilian career. What they do, how they got there, and advice for any other veteran seeking to do the same. Today is episode number 203 with Elliot Wilson.
You never want to burn your bridges. And the tech product manager I resigned on in Los Angeles when I was moving to Chicago to work for my sponsor, Dad. It turns out that I thought I was making a good career move. It was probably the most expensive move I ever made in my life because he ended up being the CEO and co-founder of ZipRecruiter. And so I had good relations with him. My wife is from LA. She liked an adventure. She never wanted to move back to LA. They were headquartered there. But when he decided to open up his facility here and he reached out to me, I thought that we had never lived in Arizona. It sounded like a new challenge. And I told him that as long as I worked for him or his COO, I would resign on this really cool opportunity I had at Sherwin.
Well, my guest today, Elliot, has a long history in startups, operations, and more. In this interview, we talk about the hiring process and how to play competing offers off of each other in order to get the best outcome possible. We talk about a variety of ways to get a job. I think Elliot embodies many different options on that. We talk about Elliot's experience in the general manager position, a role that may be appealing to many veterans. We talk about changing one's job title from a big company to a small company and how to approach this. And we talk about operations in a tech startup, as well as operations in the cost-driven physical products world. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Elliot Wilson. Joining me today in Scottsdale, Arizona, is Elliot Wilson. Elliot, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So for listeners, I wanted to give your background. Elliot is the Vice President of Operations at ZipRecruiter, which is the smartest way to hire and get hired. He started out at the Air Force Academy, after which he served in the Air Force for nearly 3 years. He has worked as a Senior Product Manager at Pictage, General Manager overseeing 250 employees at Lovejoy, and Area Director of Distribution at Sherman Williams. He holds both an MS and MBA from Loyola Marymount University. So Elliot, maybe to start things off, if someone's on active duty listening to this, how would you explain to them what ZipRecruiter does?
Sure. So if you've heard our ads, we brand ourselves pretty loudly as the smartest way for employers to hire. And we cite a statistic that 80% of employers receive a quality candidate from our website within 24 hours. What this basically means is we're a marketplace like a lot of the early job boards, but that we use machine learning and some sophisticated intelligence to identify the right job seekers and encourage them to apply pretty proactively to make those matches faster. And this can be pretty intimidating for veterans because the resumes may not be a natural match for the artificial intelligence. So particularly for the veteran listeners out there, I would recommend setting up job alerts so that if the AI doesn't find you as a great match, you can still find those opportunities and jump on them early. And then in parallel to that, do your networking, jump on LinkedIn, look for those side doors to build relationships into those organizations.
And how would you explain your role as VP of operations?
So as you mentioned earlier, I'm an Air Force veteran, so I'm going to use an Air Force analogy to describe that. I see my role kind of like an AWACS plane over the battle space, and it's an absolute blast. Our headquarters are in Santa Monica, California, and that's kind of our operations, brain trust there. And then I'm out here in Arizona where our primary contact center is, and I have the opportunity to oversee our customer service and sales enablement strategy, boots on the ground, and it's a lot of fun.
And you've had a, you and I chatted a couple months ago and we were talking about operations and it seems like you're really passionate about operations. What is it exactly that attracted you to an operations role and what do you love about that?
So I mean, when I made the decision to join the military, one thing I always loved was solving interesting process problems. And my degree from the academy was in computer engineering. And so process has always been something that's fascinated me. And then I'll give all the credit for my training in the Air Force, but being in the Air Force and going to an academy, I really fell in love with leading, inspiring, motivating people. And operations is an opportunity where you can both solve problems, but also problems that involve people. And that's really, really exciting for me.
And could you walk us through, I imagine there's no typical day for you, but if you could walk us through maybe a representative day, and especially if you can kind of timestamp it to let us know
when you're starting work, when you're ending work, and trying to get that flavor of what it's actually like to be in your shoes for a day.
Sure. So operations tend to go long. They tend to start earlier around the clock and go late. And what I've enjoyed doing throughout my career is I like coming in a little bit later and staying later. And it lets me tighten up and make sure that everything's going well into the next day when it's starting. So typically I roll in around 9:30, and I like to spend my first hour walking the floor, figuring out what's going on, whether that was walking the floor of a manufacturing operation or a distribution center or a contact center. And I'll use another Air Force analogy, the OODA loop, which is observe, orient, decide, act. I like doing that throughout my day, but especially in the morning when I'm trying to understand what's going right and what's going wrong. From there, from about 10 a.m. through about 3 p.m., I have a lot of meetings scheduled, whether it's with product managers back at corporate or various team managers or interviews. And then I really like to spend the latter part of my day really doing as much strategic thinking as I can. I like to reserve some white space there where I can think about what kind of KPI trends we're seeing, what kind of moves we need to make within the organization, reading some trade journals. So really allowing myself time to think strategically and kind of get out of the tactical weeds.
That's great. And what does it look like when it comes to work-life balance? Are you having to travel a lot? Do you have to work on weekends? What's that look like?
So I'll say in the role I'm in now, it's better than it's ever been. Operations is a challenge, especially, you know, my prior role at Sherwin, it was continuous operations. I had 5 shifts, and it was a struggle. Being with a tech company, it's a lot easier. When I started at this company, every operational team was with 1 shift, and I was really excited about that until about 2 months later when I took our trust and safety team to continuous operations. But even that, in doing that, I was able to schedule and set the right cultural guidelines that, there's really no reason why I or the leadership team needed to be woken up in the middle of the night.
Is your sense that is it with like Sherman Williams, is that more of a physical product versus a digital product that makes a difference in kind of the pace of operations or the need to manage things, 24/7? Or what made that, or is that something unique about ZipRecruiter, or what made it a little bit more manageable?
No, I think one of the big differences there is, I mean, Sherwin was a very highly efficient organization, but it was really managing uptime. And I think managing uptime is difficult, whether in whatever role you're in. And fortunately, here at Zip, I'm not running the IT infrastructure. I think if I was running the IT infrastructure, if I was managing the website's uptime, that role would be pretty time intensive and I'd be glued to my phone. But in the role where I'm managing people, primarily people that are touching the customer, fortunately our customers mostly engage with us during normal business hours. So it's really, I think, more of a function, as well as the fact that I'm transitioning from managing a cost center, which is what I had at Sherwin and at Lovejoy, to managing a profit center where I'm managing sales enablement and salespeople.
Awesome. And one of the things that stood out for me the last time we chatted was you've had a very unique career path in getting here. And could you maybe just take us back to when you got out of the Air Force, how you approached that first job search, and then just kind of walk us through, I'll probably interrupt you along the way, but walk us through kind of your career from the Air Force and getting to this point.
Sure. So I've acquired jobs just about every way you could possibly imagine. My first job out of the Air Force, I started down I tried everything I could. I worked job boards pretty hard, and I found some really interesting jobs. I was working on job boards. And I also tried the GMO transition services, the Lucas Group, Orion's, Bradley Morris's of the world. Specifically, I used Lucas Group, and I had a pending offer with International Paper with Lucas Group that I was able to pin against an offer from a pending offer from a tech company. I used the International Paper to close out that tech company. That tech company was Pictage. And I was with them for a few years.
What do you mean by that? Like just for someone who's on active duty, like what does that mean to kind of play those offers off of each other?
Sure. So I had interviewed with Pictage, and they kind of told me that, yeah, we're interviewing other candidates. We'll get back to you. And then one nice thing about the JMO programs is they're really good about, on both sides of the speed dating, kind of giving people tight timelines and expectations. And so I had an offer from International Paper, and I had asked to buy some time from them. And they told me they agreed that I could get back to them by Friday. And so I called the hiring manager at Pictage, and I said, hey, I want your job. It's more interesting than the job at International Paper. I need to get them an answer by Friday. And I, for better or worse, this is my first time in the Air Force. I told them what the offer was at International Paper. And the hiring manager at Pictage says, great, we're going to offer you the exact same thing. And I accepted. So
if you were
I got the better job for the salary I was willing to take at the other company.
That's great. I mean, first of all, good for you and just even advocating for yourself and asking for that. But I'm wondering if you were to go back and do that again, would you have not disclosed the other offer, or how would you have done that differently?
I actually did do it a little differently later in life. I probably wouldn't have disclosed. I don't think that it helped me at all. I'd also say that it didn't necessarily hurt me. When you're trying to get out of the Air Force, when you're transitioning out of the military, I'd really focus on trying to get the right job of where you want to go. And as long as it's a salary range you're willing to take, view that first job almost as grad school, just to build up your skill set and really position yourself for the long-term future. And this was a story I wasn't planning to tell, but a couple years later, 2008 hit, and that tech company was in a growth mode, and it switched from growth mode to cash preservation mode when the recession hit hardcore. And I was one of three product managers in my division, and they did a big cut. And of the three, I was the only one that was left. And I later found out that the other guys around me were making considerably more than me, which again, being the new guy in the industry, not really being high maintenance, just grinding and adding value, it positioned me well not only to improve my skill set, but also make sure that I made it through that recession with a job.
That's amazing. It's so funny. It's, sometimes you can almost negotiate against yourself. Like, it's crazy to think of had you fought for or obtained a higher salary, your head might have been in the chopping block. Not that that's a recommendation to go for a lower salary, but it's crazy how that can work out like that.
Sure.
I kind of interrupted your story of that transition. So you play these offers off each other. You join this tech company, Pictage. What was it about it that drew you to tech initially?
It's problem solving process. I was actually getting an MBA at the time when I was in the Air Force, and I started up a Grubhub type website before Grubhub for the Air Force base, and really just enjoyed trying to innovate and disrupt. So I used that to land the job in the tech space.
And for someone who may not be familiar with it, what's kind of like the overview on that product manager type role? What sort of things were you doing in that capacity?
So product manager, it's for a tech company looking to innovate. And I know this is your wheelhouse, but they're kind of the brains of the operation, looking how to grow revenue, how to position the product so that it resonates really well with the customer base. I was specifically more back-end technical product management in terms of designing and building our offering, and working with outside vendors and our behind the scenes team to make sure that the product worked really well for customers.
Yep. I think one thing that's appealing is especially for those non-commissioned officers or officers listening who have had more leadership experience. My outside perspective is that, my experience on submarines, you're interfacing with every different department, or if you're officer of the deck, or if you're in that command position, you're having to lead diverse teams with specialized knowledge, and the product manager is interfacing with customer support team and the engineering team, and they're talking to the sales team, and they're getting all sorts of different input from different parties and coming up with a cohesive strategy. And to me, that's always seemed relevant to a lot of the experience that people who have a leadership position in the military have.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And so what then took you from Pictage to Lovejoy?
So for anybody who's a Service Academy grad, we were all offered a family as a home away from home called a sponsor family. And luck of the draw, the family I got in Chicago, they were old Chicago money, and they had a family company that had been in their family for over 100 years. And they didn't have a fifth generation to run the company. So being a process guy that loves interfacing with people, the opportunity to be mentored by that family, they offered me the opportunity to run their family company as the fifth generation. And so for me, at that point, I thought I was saying goodbye to my tech career, and I transitioned out to Chicago. I spent 6 months actually in their German facilities first, and then I came back to Chicago, and I worked my way to running that company. And I did that for 6.5 years. Ultimately, that family company, the family decided to sell the company. The company, just the industry moves, and there's a lot of consolidation happening, and the family was losing its competitive edge. And it's just a good reminder that no business is entitled to exist forever. And they sold it at a good time. And when that was clear that was going to happen, I went back to the military well, if you will. I went to a hiring fair for academy grads called SAC, which is the five service academies. And at the time, I was actually thinking of starting my own tech startup. I was the single breadwinner for my family with two small kids, so that weighed heavily on me. And that career fair ended up opening a lot of doors for me. So if you have an opportunity to go to SAC, there's also some equivalents if you're not a service academy grad. Military Mojo is one of them. There's quite a few of them. But I recommend them not only for the opportunities, but also just an ability to calibrate what you're interested in and finding side doors into employers. But again, playing one employer off another, which I think is a fantastic ability that some of these conferences allow you to do. I was able to squeeze Sherwin-Williams by throwing a pending offer ahead by Google under the bus.
That's awesome. I love that. It's, you know, when you're fundraising and you get an offer for funding, it's called a term sheet. And they say the only way to get a better term sheet is to have another alternative. And I think that what you're describing is the same thing from the job offer standpoint. It can be difficult to justify, like, hey, I want to be paid more. But if you have a competing offer, it's like, look, they're offering me much more. I'm going to go with them. It's a better deal. And it gives you a credible way to kind of push up whatever you want to. Maybe it's more vacation time or title or salary or equity or stocks or whatever it is. But that's that seems to be a skill that you have employed multiple times pretty well.
Right. In this case, again, I didn't actually, it was a little bit different that I actually didn't even wait for the salary. So I was interviewing with Sherwin, and earlier in the week I had interviewed with Google. And the way Google works is once they decide to extend you an offer, they have to put your package forward to a board. And they do this to make sure that managers aren't settling and that they decide that this is a candidate worthy of Google. But it bought me some time. And so when I interviewed with Sherwin, I decided that the Sherwin opportunity was one I wanted more than Google. And so when I sensed that they were going to similarly drag their feet, I let them know that I had a pending offer from Google, the date that I expected it to be extended, and that if they could beat Google with an offer, that I wouldn't wait for the Google offer.
I love that too, because you're leveraging this powerful thing called signaling. And just by saying that you have an offer from Google, you know, Google is perceived as a very, very high quality employer that screens their employees very well. And so to even just say that that's the potential employer, I think it enhances your own image. It's like, oh, this person's really credible. I imagine that plays well in their perception of you as a candidate.
Yeah, I think it did.
One other thing about Lovejoys, you had worked up to be general manager, and I haven't actually had a lot of GMs on the show. Could you talk about, you know, what is a general manager and what was that life like?
So in that situation, the additional challenge you have, which I know you as a tech founder have to deal with, is it's not just managing your employees, but also managing the family and shareholders and their expectations. Meeting with the board of directors, the owner also had a president's forum. So, and managing up can be just as difficult as managing, the folks down below. So just because you climb the ladder doesn't mean that it's any easier, that's for sure.
And generally, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, I imagine that in that general manager position, you have, you know, it's always struck me as the general manager position is almost like a mini CEO, where you have responsibility for a portion of the business or a segment of the business or a significant chunk of it. And generally they'll call that as having P&L or profit and loss responsibility, which means that you've got a budget, you've got responsibility, not just for the revenue, but also for the costs. And I think one of the things that many listeners might find appealing about a general manager position, you know, although it's difficult to obtain that, or you might have to work up to it. It is, you know, the, in my view, it seems like the equivalent of being CEO of a unit. You have responsibility for every aspect, and particularly if you want to run a larger organization or if you want to start your own, it's a way to get in the driver's seat, but you still have other, you know, other people looking out for you. So it's not training wheels. I think that's like dumbing it down too much, but it's all of the benefits of being in charge, but you also have a good support system around you. Would you say that's true of your experience at Lovejoy?
Absolutely. And I mean, one of the other things that I did, my career doesn't follow this perfectly, but there's the old adage that you should, if you start with a large company, say you lateral to a higher title at a small company, and then you take that higher title and lateral to a large company. And that's kind of what I was able to do here because I had small company P&L experience with a lot of experience in the manufacturing environment. We actually manufacture components that go into factories, which means I had toured hundreds and hundreds of factories. And when I went to Sherwin, I had both P&L experience and I could walk around their facility with a lot of confidence. And so they saw, obviously, those skill sets as relatively low risk relative to other candidates they would bring in from the outside to perform that job.
That's great. I love that concept you threw out of leveraging the title and going from, you know, you could parachute into a smaller company with a bigger title, or, you know, if you do go to a bigger company, then you probably take on a smaller title, but it's just all part of the decision of what matters to you and which things that you want to focus on optimizing. So how did you make the switch then? Because it seems pretty different going from Sherman Williams, you're doing director of distribution, and then you go on to ZipRecruiter in a very senior role as vice president of operations. How did that come about?
So as they say in a lot of, you never want to burn your bridges. And the tech product manager I resigned on in Los Angeles when I was moving to Chicago to work for my sponsor dad, it turns out that I thought I was making a good career move. It was probably the most expensive move I ever made in my life because he ended up being the CEO and co-founder of ZipRecruiter. And so I had good relations with him. My wife is from LA. She likes an adventure. She never wanted to move back to LA. They were headquartered there. But when he decided to open up his facility here and he reached out to me, I thought that we had never lived in Arizona. It sounded like a new challenge. And I told him that as long as I worked for him or his COO, I would resign on this really cool opportunity I had at Sherwin.
That's great. I mean, that's a prime time example of when people talk about your network or networking, the fact that you had worked with this person, he knew you, he liked you, you were a known commodity, you had a relationship that, you know, I love the way you put it, you know, it may have cost you money going to that other job rather than maybe being along for the ride of founding ZipRecruiter, but no one can ever have that sort of insight in advance. But I love that thought that you maintained that relationship, you preserved it. It's not like you flipped him the bird and quit on the spot. I imagine you handled it pretty gracefully and he understood why you were leaving, and that allowed you to have that door open to go back in. And you know, that position, one, it might have been difficult had you not known him to obtain that position. And then two, the autonomy that you had in saying, this is the location I want to work from and I want to report to you or this other person, that would probably be difficult for someone who didn't know the CEO at all to really make the case for those maybe perks, you would call them.
Sure. And I guess one point of clarification, though, is I actually came in as a director into Zip. And when I resigned in Sherwin, I was managing north of 300 employees. The warehouse was 750,000 square feet. I was responsible for all paint distribution in the 12 Western states and two Canadian provinces. And when I left Sherwin for Zip, I started with a team of 6 employees.
That's great. The interview that I always think of on that one of the very first interviews I did was with a guy named Jimmy Sopko. It's the 6th episode of Beyond the Uniform, and he went directly from active duty into Pinterest. And he started out in the customer support team. It was, you know, it was him at like age 28 or 29, and everyone else around him was like 23 years old. And so in some ways, it was a big step back in terms of title and responsibility and certainly ego and pay. And, you know, because of his work ethic, because of his military experience, he was able to accelerate far beyond his peers and much faster and prove his value and work up very, very quickly. But it did take that step back, and it did take really hustling and showing what he could do. And it sounds like you did a similar thing, which was you had this incredible amount of responsibility at Sherwin-Williams in terms of the number of employees and responsibility and even title, but you were willing to make a sacrifice, a, you know, what turned out to be, I imagine, a short-term sacrifice, but you were willing to take that step back in terms of title and number of people you were managing and responsibility, and just really proved yourself of not just doing your job, but it sounds like you were starting to add value beyond your specific role and title and being able to show them that you could contribute to the bigger team. And I imagine that that made it easier for them to promote you faster and give you more responsibility quicker.
That's right. Yep.
For someone listening who's interested in operations, are there any skill gaps that they need to fill between their military service and doing something in operations?
So, I mean, I'd say that the thing to really focus in on is your storytelling. And I know you just ran a number of podcasts on storytelling, but storytelling is really, really powerful. Especially your first role out of the military, they're going to hire you because of your work ethic, your integrity, these things that they know about you, but also how you can connect that to how you're going to add value for their organization. You can certainly try to you know, throw some certificates or some reading relative to Lean, Six Sigma, quick response manufacturing, that kind of stuff. But really focus on whatever you're doing, figure out how that focuses into the story of why you and why it makes most sense to hire you for that specific role.
That's great. And I always like to ask about resources of anything that's been helpful to you in your civilian career. That could be books or conferences, programs, podcasts, anything that you would recommend that listeners check out?
Sure. One book that the last three companies I've been at, I've had my entire management team read, is Leadership and Self-Deception by the Arbinger Institute. And what it's written as a novel to kind of talk. It's about a manager who comes into an organization and is struggling, and he has a mentor that comes alongside and helps coach him up in that organization. But I really like it because it helps understand the EQ challenges of a civilian work environment. And the teams that I've had read this book, none of them were transitioning military, but I think transitioning military would get a lot of insight out of it as well as just traditional managers, because it tackles EQ challenges within a civilian workplace so well. Another thing is relative to conferences. This isn't necessarily specific to operations, but I would really recommend trying to find some kind of job fairs specific to transitioning veterans if you can. I like it not only because they provide side doors, but because they let you figure out what you really want to do. Is I think a lot of people transition out of the military, they think I'm a project manager or I'm an operations person because that's what I've done. But there's also a number of other really great career fields out there. I'm in a contact center with several hundred inside sales professionals. Inside sales is a great profession for transitioning veterans. And I know a lot of transitioning veterans do very well in outside sales too. So getting to those conferences and talking about what is available and what's a real option for you, I think could add a lot of value for just about any transitioning veteran.
That's great. Go ahead.
One last concept, and I'd reserve this really for the senior type folks who are transitioning out, the 20-year plus veterans. If you're going for high level roles, one thing I would also recommend considering is maybe checking out some books on how to interview for consulting companies like McKinsey or Bain. You're gonna find that these higher level roles are gonna ask behavioral type interview questions, and you're gonna go against people that have these kind of backgrounds. And so if you can articulate and formulate your responses in a way that comes across as really polished, I think it would really help set you apart.
That's great. And for listeners, in the show notes at beyonduniform.io, I'll have links to everything that Elliot's talked about, the Military Mojo, ZipRecruiter, everything is mentioned, the books and conferences. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended, and that is, you know, what have we not talked about that you want to make sure you share with listeners before we wrap up?
The last thing I want to talk about is that I think you've probably experienced it with your fundraising and everything else, is that along the way to success in anything, there's lots and lots of failures. One thing that I haven't mentioned yet was that just before that SAC career fair where I had the Google and Sherwin and a couple other offers, I had an interview with Amazon. And it was an interview that I thought that was mine to be had, the job I felt uniquely qualified for. And I'd almost taken the job as a given. And at the time, I hadn't interviewed externally for 10 years. And they came out with me with some of these behavioral-based interview questions that I recommended grabbing those books for a McKinsey or Bain. And I totally blew the behavioral-based interview question. I didn't even know what kind of structure or formulation they were looking at. I didn't approach a problem right. And so because of that, I was passed over for a job that I still feel that I would have done extremely well at. And so because of that, I regrouped. I learned from it. I grabbed those books. I checked out those books. And by the time the SAC interviews hit, I was able to really, really sail through those type of interview questions really well.
That's great. It's refreshing to... It's always refreshing to hear people open up about failure, and I think that is where all the growth comes from and all the learnings come from. And I think we're well acquainted with that, exercise analogy of tearing muscle and rebuilding it. And it seems like that process too, that all of these paths are, everyone's career path is littered with failures and mistakes, and that the ability to learn from those things is what allows us to adapt and grow stronger and go further. So I appreciate your being candid about that.
Well, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate this podcast. And in terms of storytelling, you do a fantastic job. And I certainly hope that veterans listening to this program will appreciate how important that is. I think that EQ and ability to storytell is something that I know that I fully didn't appreciate until many years after transitioning out of the Air Force. It's just how important that really is.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your story, Elliot, and thanks for joining us today. Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Uniform. There are over 200 free episodes at beyondtheuniform.io. They're classified by the industry of focus, the functional role the person plays, and more. Beyond the Uniform is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Justin Asiri. Our Director of Outreach, responsible for sponsorship and guest episodes, is Steve Bain. Our editor, responsible for the show notes and text transcripts for all episodes, is Kathleen Dillon. Our data analytics and insights advisor is Andrew Woolridge. If you are enjoying Beyond the Uniform, you can help us out by telling your veterans and friends in the military about this free resource. There is more information on the website about how you can sponsor an episode or donate to our program to help us grow the work that we're doing. Be sure to check out the coaching section of beyondtheuniform.io, where you can be paired with professional, subsidized coaches to help you figure out your next career move. You can sign up for our newsletter to be up to date on the latest happenings at Beyond the Uniform. And in each show notes section, there is a link to audible.com, which is providing a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. You get a free book of your choosing, and Beyond the Uniform gets $15 to subsidize the cost of the show, regardless of whether you continue with audible.com or not. Check that out and more in the show notes for this episode. Keep the feedback coming. Let me know what resources would help you in your career, and we'll do our best to make that happen. Take care, be safe, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.